On behalf of the executive committee of IPCC and the authors, the 1,000 authors, I will just walk through some of the key findings of the fifth assessment report of IPCC. Almost the 7,000 pages of document will capture three main messages that came up. The first one is that the human influence on climate system is clear. And then the second is that the more we disrupt our climate, the more we risk severe, pervasive, and irreversible impact. And then the third message is that we have the means to limit the climate change and build a more prosperous, sustainable future. We have the problem, we create the problem, and then it's escalating, and then we have to be aware of that, but we can't solve the problem. And the extremely likely that human influence has been the dominant cause of climate warming in the 20th century, looking at the global average combined land and surface temperature, and then the global average and sea level change. And then if you look at the trend of the global average greenhouse gas concentration, basically CO2, methane, and nitrous oxide, and then to look at the global anthropogenic CO2 emissions basically on fossil fuel, the fossil fuel and forestry, you will see all are consistent. And the anthropogenic greenhouse gas emissions have increased since the pre-industrial era, driven largely by economic growth and the population. As you can see it, the growth rate of the past decade, the last decade, has been much more faster than the growth rate of the previous three decades. We are 2.2% per year. Mainly, this is CO2. And then, as you can see it also from the CO2 emission from the fossil fuel industrial processes. And then the emission, 35% are coming from the energy sector, 24% of agriculture, forestry, and land use, other land use. In this IPCC report, we did not make a distinction between the, we did not treat in a separate chapter agriculture, forestry, and other land use. And then we call it the AFOLU. This has been treated in single chapter. And then 21% from the industry, 14 on the transport, and then 6 from the building sector. And then this is based on the figures of 2010. And then the projected changes to the climate system have indicated that oceans will continue to warm during the 21st century if we continue the same trend. And then the global mean sea level will continue to rise also during the 21st century. And then it is very likely that Arctic sea ice cover will continue to shrink and thin as global mean temperature will rise, and then the global glacier volume will further decrease. And then those are some of the projections if we are continuing the business as usual. And then some potential also impacts have seen in different places, in different sectors, and then the food and water shortage, and then you know much more better than I do, and then that will be problematic in certain parts of the world, increased displacement of population, and increased poverty, and then coastal flooding, and then those are some of the potential impact of the climate change. And then the real problem is that the stabilization of the atmospheric concentration that required moving away from the baseline, regardless of the mitigation goals. And then if we are continuing the business as usual, and then we will lead to more than 1,000 ppm of CO2. And then there is a number of stabilization scenario has been assessed, particularly by the working group 3, and then some are consistent with the 2 degree. And then the 2 degree threshold, maintaining that means to completely change the energy system, and then to have much more also in this in that context, forestry and AFOLU is going to play a fundamental crucial role. And then if we start action now or if we delay action, and then the role and then the fundamental role of forestry and AFOLU sector is fundamentally crucial, and then some of the technology is related also to that. And then mitigation measure that will be more efficient use of energy, as I indicated, a greater use of the low carbon and no carbon energy, and then improve carbon sinks. And then that is, as I indicated, reduce deforestation and improve forest management and planting of new forests, bioenergy with carbon capture and storage, and then the lifestyle and behavior changes. And then all those are supposed to play an important role in the mitigation measures. And then, as already indicated, agriculture, forestry, and other land use are unique sector because they are the land offer the potential of greenhouse gas removal, not just the emission. And at the same time, unlike most of the sectors, greenhouse gas emission mostly do not come from energy use in the sector. Emission are from the land use and management. And the agricultural emission also are increasing, but not net forestry CO2 emission. This have fallen recently, as already indicated in the speech of the Director General. And AFALU is the only sector where net emission fell in most recent decades. And the emission intensity also of the AFALU product is falling as agriculture and forestry become more efficient. That is a global figure, and then there is differences of different regions and different areas, as already indicated also by the Director General. And then what is the potential of the, there is a number of potential of mitigation option for reducing greenhouse gas emission in the AFALU sector. And then we can see it, the global economic mitigation potential in agriculture in 2050 are estimated to be in the range of 0.5 to 10.6 gigaton of CO2 per year. And then the reduction also of food losses and waste, and then changes in diet, and then the forestry mitigation option are estimated to contribute to 0.2 to 13.8 gigaton of CO2 per year. As you can see, there is a lot of potential also to be considered. And then on the demand and the supply side, there is a number of measures that need to be considered. While on the supply side, measures in the AFALU sector are large and most of the time the cost competitive, in the demand side measures such as diet change and waste reduction also have large but uncertain mitigation. And then there is demand side measures that may be in some cases difficult to implement, but they are worthy of further research. And other options in the AFALU sector include bioenergy. And there is a global technical primary biomass potential in 2050, looking at the projected reduced demand on traditional biomass, industrial organic residue, forest and agriculture, and then dedicated crop optimal forest harvesting. And then those are based on the existing literature. And then as you can see it, there is some agreement in the literature. And then the red is low, and then the pink is medium, and then the blue is high confidence. For instance, the projector reduced demand of traditional biomass, there is high confidence in the literature. And those are the what is existing in the literature on those different technical potential by 2050. And then the bioenergy can play a critical role for mitigation, but there are issues to consider, and such as sustainability of practices and the efficiency of bioenergy system. Now, there is a number of barriers, those are very well known. This is to a large deployment of bioenergy that include concern about the GHG emission from land, food security, water security, biodiversity conservation, and livelihood. And then the bioenergy technology also are diverse and span a wide range of option and technology pathways. And in some regions, specific bioenergy options, such as improved cook stove and small-scale biogas and biopower products, could reduce GHG emission and improve livelihood, and then they had tremendous effect on the health, particularly for women and the children. And then let me just end up that saying that there is, we do have the windows of opportunity in a rapid closing, is rapid closing, because if we want to maintain the at a 2-degree world by the end of the century, and then we have to have in mind that the amount of our carbon budget remaining is only 1,000 gigaton. And in that, I think bioenergy, Afolu, sector is playing a fundamental and critical role, and there's no way we can achieve it without the critical input of the critical element of the Afolu sector and then the forest sector in general. And those are, in a nutshell, very briefly, some of the key element highlights of the IPCC FIFA assessment report, and thank you for listening.
Well, happy International Day of Forest, everyone. Just as an aside, I think most of you probably don't know that this is an auspicious day for another reason. It is also the International Day of Happiness, as declared by the UN General Assembly in June of 2012. So be happy. Enjoy the good news about forests and think about forests and climate change on this auspicious day. I'd like to start by introducing my colleagues who did most of the heavy work on this study. Francesco Tubiello, please stand up. Sandro Federici and Joseph Schmidhuber. Thank you, guys. I introduced them because they did most of this work. Plus, I hope they'll help me answer any difficult questions you might have later on. It's important to note that they are from the Natural Resources and Economic and Social parts of FAO. And I'm from forestry, so it's been a good collaboration across the institution. Much of the basic data comes for this study from the Global Forest Resources Assessment. As such, it's new. It comes out this year. So this is a little bit of a preview of some of that digested in terms of carbon emissions. Also, there is data here from that's acquired through FAO's FAOSTAT platform. The details of the study and the methods will be released, as was noted earlier, during the upcoming World Forestry Congress in Durban, South Africa, in September. Now, on to the good news. In addition to the International Day of Happiness, good news. I'll start backing up a little bit and trying to set the stage. We all know, I think, that forests are usually net carbon sinks. That means that they remove more carbon from the atmosphere than they emit. And today, I'll only be talking about carbon, not about the other greenhouse gases. But when forest is converted to agriculture or other land use, this land becomes a source. So those lands are no longer forests, they are something else. That's where most of these emissions come from. But we'll talk more about them in a little bit of detail, but not too much. It is, after all, the International Day of Happiness. So I'll talk about sources and sinks that are forest-related. The sources of emissions, two major bins, and these are described in many different ways in different venues. But simply put, the first is primarily the conversion of forest. That's pretty clear. The second is primarily the harvest and natural disturbance in forest that remains forest. You can divide those categories up in a number of different ways, but simply put, that's the way they kind of hold together. Sinks, or the ability of forests to absorb carbon and store it, come primarily from two sources as well. Expansion in forest area, in other words, as forest area increases, there is more carbon stored, and increased stocking. I'm reminded by one of my non-forester colleagues to note that, in this case, stockings are not underwear that you put on your feet. This is increased stocking that shows that forests are increasing their stocks, the stocks of, in this case, of carbon. First, we'll talk a little bit about carbon emissions from forests, in other words, forest as a source of emissions. Two main sources of these forest-related emissions. One is, of course, the conversion to non-forest use. Some call this deforestation. It is, in most cases, a deliberate action to change forest cover into some other land use. It's important to remember that. It's not done for fun, and it's not done wantonly. It's done generally for a purpose. The second is reduction in forest carbon stocks, which some would call degradation. It's important to note that as we talk about degradation today, we're talking about the form of degradation that really means a reduction in carbon stocks in forests that remain forest. Some of you, when you hear this word, you have visions of dark and dingy, burned forest where there are ugly creatures, terrible things that are happening. This is not necessarily the case. It can be just a reduction in carbon stocks, in this case, to be degradation. Well, on to the news. I'm going to use figures that are slightly different from the Director General's earlier. Please note, it's not due to any disrespect. But these numbers are a little bit different. They still show the same direction of change, however. Global emissions are decreasing from forest-related use. They've decreased over the last decade by about 25%, from about 5 gigatons of carbon dioxide per year to about 4. This is based on 2015 numbers. Now, this includes forest conversion, harvest, natural disturbance, those categories that some would call deforestation and degradation. Of this amount, about 75% comes from forest conversion. So if we wanted to look in one direction, we would say it's the demand of the non-forest sector for forested land for other purposes, whether that be agriculture or urbanization, infrastructure, mining, other uses. The remainder comes from reductions in forest stocking. So what happens actually in the forest that remains forest. Since we're under a time constraint, I'll move on to forest as carbon reservoirs, or sinks. The net forest sink is storing about 2 billion tons of CO2 every year. Now, it's hard to imagine what 2 billion tons of CO2 is. Well, it's about a third of the total annual greenhouse gas emissions from the transportation sector. So if you think about all airplanes, ships, trains, car, automobiles, and trucks, combined, all those emissions, about one-third of those, the equivalent of that, are absorbed and stored in forests every year. Now, about half of the growth in these gains comes from the expansion of planted forest area. Planted forests represent globally only 7% of global forest area, yet they provide a vitally important function in increasing the storage of carbon, removing carbon from the atmosphere. It's a good reason, in addition to the other values of planted forests, to think about these important uses of planted forests. How else can we describe where the gain comes from? Well, in developed economies, most of it comes from increased stocking rates, or you can say growth within the forest. This isn't an expansion of the forest area, but rather growth in the forest. It comes from improved planting materials, lower removals in some cases from forest, natural forest, growth in general. Only a little over 10% comes from increased forest area. In developing economies, the net sink really comes from net forest area expansion. And you can see this dramatically in some countries, such as China, which have dramatically increased their forest area through planting in recent years. Countries in developed economies in the developed world represent about 60% of the total forest carbon sink. This is down from 65% in the previous decade, which means that the sinks in the developing world have increased to 40% of the total during this period. The reason for the decline in the developed world is a slowing of planted forest expansion. Again, another reason that planted forests are important in the greenhouse gas equation. Now, does the atmosphere care about sources and sinks necessarily? No. If the atmosphere could care about anything, it would care about net emissions, because that's what it sees. Net emissions are a pretty simple equation, sources minus sinks, generally speaking. Forest-related sources have decreased. We saw that earlier. It's a pretty dramatic decrease, 25%. And net forest sinks have remained pretty stable over time, although they're not stable in all regions. Some regions, the sinks have increased. Others, they've decreased. And for those details, you'll have to stay tuned to the World Forestry Congress in September and get all of those details, which I'm sure you'll be most interested in. So if the sources have decreased and sinks have remained stable, it means that net forest-related emissions have decreased. This is a big decrease from 1.7 gigatons to 0.8 gigatons per year over this reporting period. So it's a big change. I'd like to conclude by saying that it's pretty clear that many countries have demonstrated improved land management, both on the forest side of this equation and in the agriculture and other land use side, where these actions collectively seem to be slowing forest carbon-related emissions. That's very good news. And I think certainly there's room to still improve, but this is encouraging. Perhaps not so surprising is that agricultural expansion into natural forest continues to dominate forest-related emissions. I'd reiterate that these are not, again, forest emissions. These are forest-related emissions. And that's not important just because some of us are foresters. It's important because if we want to try and fix the problem, we need to know where it occurs. It doesn't occur in the forestry sector. It occurs in the demand for agricultural land and land for other purposes. So it's addressing that through organizations such as ours and others to find ways to reduce the amount of demand for natural forest land and hence reduce those emissions. It's also clear from these findings that planted forests drive the expansion of carbon sinks. That seems most likely in the future as the total forest area is likely to continue to decline and the human population continues to increase. So planted forests will become more important for both climate change purposes and productive purposes. Finally, I think the good news that's been shown over the last decade or so, and it's confirmed through this study, and in fact enhanced, is that the proportion of forest-related emissions as a proportion of the total emissions is lower than we previously thought. Some of you remember when the Stern report came out that forestry was pegged with about 20%, I think, of global emissions. Now we know that that's not the case. And this is an evolving science, so the numbers we talk about today and you see in print in September aren't also the final answer, obviously. But the trend is certainly demonstrating that we're getting a better handle on forest-related emissions, something that was confirmed by our colleague earlier as well. With that, I'd like to just note that there are still opportunities, obviously, for us to use forests in climate change mitigation, to improve the management of forests that remain forest, to slow the growth of agricultural expansion into natural forest. These are big challenges, challenges that won't be solved in a few years, but will take continued, sustained, and serious effort. With that, I'd like to thank you.
His Excellency, Director General José Graziano da Silva, esteemed participants, ladies and gentlemen, I would like to begin my speech by stating my gratitude to the Food and Agricultural Organization for inviting me to this event. It is indeed a great pleasure to be here with you to celebrate the International Day of Forests with the opportunity to address you. All of us, as the participants of this event in such an important day, are aware of the crucial role of forests in mitigating the threats of climate change. The effective conservation and sustainable management of forests clearly enhance forest carbon stock and provide an opportunity to address the climate change. It is therefore our mutual responsibility to do our best to overcome such challenges. In this context, Allow me to share our experiences in this field with you. We are trying to increase the area of forested lands, rehabilitate the degraded forests, increase the productivity of forests by means of silvicultural activities, and protect the forested lands against biotic and abiotic impacts, as well as managing the forests in sustainable manner within the framework of climate change. We are carrying out activities for combating water and wind erosion, determination of done areas, controlling of floods and avalanches in the mountain regions in order to prevent the potential disasters caused by climate change. The other important activity is to promote the people living in or around the forests to use solar water heating system in order to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. For a long time, forestry activities in Turkey have been conducted by considering the multiple social, economic, and environmental aspects of forests. As the recent concerns of the globe, such as climate change, biodiversity, and land degradation issues, emerged during the last three decades, we have been able to respond quickly. However, that does not mean we have solved all the problems. Solving and overcoming our problems on environmental degradation requires a wide variety of inputs from all stakeholders, including national and international organizations. I would also like to emphasize that Turkey plays an effective and active role in the international arena about the forestry-related activities. In this scope, as you may know, Turkey hosted third session of Forest Europe to develop a mechanism that is legally binding for the forest in Europe. Turkey signed all decisions taken during the process of Forest Europe and acted according to these decisions. For example, we have already prepared our national forestry program and indicators for sustainable forest management. Due to the dynamic structure of the process, we are contributing to the updating process and we have actively taken part in the discussions for preparing a legally binding forest convention within the Europe. We successfully organized the UNFF10 in 2013 in Istanbul. This conference contributed to global forest targets, such as increasing the forested lands in sustainable way, protecting of forests, rehabilitation of degraded forest land, etc. Moreover, Turkey supported the establishment of trust fund under the scope of UNFF so as to enhance sustainable forest management worldwide. On the other hand, it is required to sustain various functions of the forest properly. We are carrying out inventory and stock control process for non-wood forest products and ecosystem services. Total non-wood forest product capacity of Turkey is more than 1 million tons. In 2014, the production of non-wood products reached up to 300,000 tons. Another important point is to provide accessible finance to forest villagers with a view to protecting and improving forests by supporting forest villagers. Dear guests, Turkey has a wide range of renewable energy resources. Our installed capacity for the renewable energy resources, including hydropower, wind and solar energy, which was 13,000 megawatts in 2002, reached up to 28,000 megawatts at 2014. This capacity also includes the wind and hydropower. Thus, the share of renewable resources in our overall energy production reaches up to 40%. As a semi-dry country, Turkey is vulnerable to the negative impacts of climate change. Thus, we gave priority to extend forest resources and rehabilitate to degraded forests. We have established 1.7 million hectares of new forests in the last 50 years, and now 28% of Turkey's total area is covered with forests. We aim to increase this percentage to 30% by 2023. Almost 2.5 million hectares are reforested and erosion control activities carried out, aiming to rehabilitate the degraded forests and halt land degradation. Indeed, Turkey may be a model for its integrated basin rehabilitation activities, which have been combined with income-generating activities and smart agricultural practices. Innovative approaches, such as the establishment of honey forests in barren lands of the country, contribute to the economy of local populations. Non-wood forest products contribute to the food security of local populations in or around the forested areas. Annual export volume of non-wood forest products has reached $300 million, and it shows an increasing trend. Ladies and gentlemen, it is also required to pay special attention to forest fires in relation to climate change. Undoubtedly, forest fires affect the global climate change negatively by releasing of tons of carbon stored on ground through years of natural processes. On the other hand, global warming could increase the size and severity of forest fires. We must turn this negative scenario into the positive one. As a country with 60% of its forests in fire-sensitive locations, Turkey is carrying out activities to prevent and combat human-induced forest fires by using state-of-the-art technology. Our forest fire early detection system employs cutting-edge technology to detect the fire at inception stage and send digital messages to the ground and air teams, enabling them to intervene in the shortest possible time. On the other hand, the integrated web-based forest fire management system installed to the work machines, planes, and helicopters makes it possible to follow and direct all combating activities from a headquarter and regional command centers. The system also records the history of the fire combating activities for further analysis and for training purposes. This system has been nominated for the new United Nations Public Service Award and passed the first round of the evaluation. Such measures have resulted in dramatic drops in the damaged areas. Only 85,000 hectares of forest has been burned for the last decade, which means almost 4 hectares per fire. This figure is enormously low when compared to that of countries with similar climatic and geographic conditions. Adaptation to climate change is not less important than the mitigation. Given the rapid rate of climate change, it must complement mitigation efforts. Unfortunately, there is no shortcut or immediate intervention to accomplish this task. We need an overarching approach with a range of proper and suitable measures. Considering their experience and knowledge, the bodies responsible for the forests of Turkey have shifted to a new approach based on ecosystem and management planning systems. Functional forest management plans aim to make anticipatory adjustments to be ready for expected climate variability. Still, there is much to do for overcoming these challenges. We also believe that there is a vicious circle between desertification, land degradation, natural resources degradation, poverty, and lack of knowledge. One of the most effective ways to break the circle is to apply the approach of integrated and participatory rehabilitation of basins. As Turkey, we attach great importance to combating desertification and land degradation. In this scope, we prepared and implemented projects and action plans for reducing degradation and rehabilitation of degraded areas. One of them is the action plan for combating erosion and national reforestation. I would like to express my deep appreciation on behalf of Turkey to host the 12th Sejinov Conference of Parties of the UNCCD on October 2015, which will be a milestone in combating desertification. I invite all parties to the conference to be held in Ankara. Finally, I must say we have always enjoyed strong, positive and prompt cooperation with FAO and considered FAO as a strategic partner to promote sustainable forest management in the region. Our active participation in European Forestry Commission, Nearest Forestry and Range Commission, and many other partnerships, such as FAO Turkey Forestry Program, set the ground for more effective cooperation as well as GEF programs at national and regional level. In this frame, FAO Sub-Regional Office for Central Asia has a critical role. It is our hope that FAO will strengthen the technical capacity of the forestry team with experienced forestry staff that will help the productive collaboration. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to express my sincere thanks to those who made this event possible, and with the hope to curb climate change in the foreseen future, I celebrate the International Day of Forests. Thank you very much.
As the Director General said in his opening remarks, this is going to be the first time the World Forestry Congress will be held in Africa since we began having these congresses in 1926. The government of the Republic of South Africa is hosting it and will be responsible for the organization and financing of the Congress, while FAO plays an advisory role providing administrative and technical support, especially in the development of the conference program. Now, the main theme of the Congress is forests and people investing in a sustainable future. And investing in forestry is investing in people, and it is also investing in sustainable development. And this is why the whole issue of investment in forestry will be considered in the Congress from different angles, from the enabling environment, including policy and institutional frameworks, from the human capital perspective, meaning knowledge, capacity development, and, of course, the assets, meaning the forests themselves and value-added production. There will be six sub-themes. And the first one is forests for socioeconomic development and food security. The second is building resilience with forests. The third, integrating forests and other land uses. The fourth, encouraging product innovation and sustainable trade. The fifth, monitoring forests for better decision making. And the sixth, improving governance by building capacity. And because these sub-themes are cross-cutting, the issue of climate change will feature in all of them. But there are two where it is most relevant, and these are the two highlighted here in red. Now, within the context of the sub-theme on building resilience with forests, the Congress will discuss a number of issues related to climate change, including how forests act as buffers against environmental change, then the overall topic of forests and climate change, and how to enhance adaptation to and mitigation of climate change, the future of UN Red Plus, and the increasing forest resilience to natural disasters and shocks. And then within the context of the sub-theme on integrating forests and other land uses, There will be discussions on the role of forests in sustaining landscapes, addressing the drivers of deforestation and forest degradation, and forests and landscape restoration. Let me give you a preview of some of the highlights of the Congress. There will be special events throughout the week, and one of these will be on forests and climate change. Another one will be on wood energy. A third on forests for future, focusing on youth. And there will be an event also on Africa, which is organized in collaboration with the African Union. We will be launching the Global Forest Resources Assessment 2015, and this has already been mentioned. There will be an international dialogue on forests and water, an innovation and investment forum with the private sector, and a pre-Congress event on community forestry and forest producer organizations. And these are just some of the many exciting events that will take place during the Congress. The special event on forests and climate change will have discussions on how forests feature in the international policy process under UNFCCC. It will provide examples on experiences on the ground with adaptation and mitigation. It will look at the private sector role in promoting effective responses to climate change. And there will also be a presentation of the key outcomes of the Forum on Forest Financing of the Standing Committee of Finance of the UNFCCC, which will take place during the Congress on 8th and 9th September. We are hoping to make this Congress a very dynamic event. We have received over 2,000 abstracts for papers, posters, and videos, and 20% of these are related to climate change. So this shows again the importance climate change will have in this Congress. There will be many interactive sessions through interviews, videos, performances, cutting-edge debates with skilled moderators, and practical demonstrations. And we are expecting more than 200 side events. There will not be a traditional conference declaration in this Congress. Instead, we will produce a series of key messages. And one of these will be a climate change message that will go to the UNFCCC COP21 in Paris. Other expected outcomes of the Congress are a strengthened recognition of the role of forests and forestry in sustainable development, highlighting the forestry's contribution to the post-2015 development agenda. Knowledge will be shared widely and in innovative ways. There will be new partnerships and networks formed, and key stakeholders, including youth, women, and local communities, will be given a voice. So, save the date for the Congress, and please join us in the World Forestry Congress in Durban in September. Thank you.